Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us.
I am Rebecca Mask-Krajewski. I'm a medical detective and nurse practitioner. I operate out of Washington, Nevada, and Oregon at this point in time, but I really want to train more medical detectives so we can have them all over the states, people with licenses who can do the LDN prescriptions, who can do the medical detective solving, mystery solving. I got into it because when I found out I had hypermobile EDS after that long investigation, already having a medical license more than, gosh, it was 2011-ish, there was nobody for me. The specialist would say, okay, and? So I got into it because I needed someone to help solve the mysteries, and I already had the skill set to do it. I wanted to be a criminology detective growing up. And instead, I had a female professor early on who said, you're a glass half full person. Like, you do not like the dark things, and you should figure out what other ways you can use this in. So I changed to healthcare later on. I really value health and resting and self-trust, because in the hustle culture, we're taught we have to earn rest. You have to be productive, when really we fundamentally owe it to ourselves to rest all along. At my clinic, we do a lot of validation, which honestly helps with your symptoms, because you've been taught from a young age, your tests are normal, your x-rays are normal. Therefore, nothing could possibly be wrong with you, and it must be in your head. In my practice, I see clients one-on-one right now. We see each other every month for 6 months, and then we move it to every 60 to 90 days, because I find that the accountability and the ability to go back and forth quickly in the first 6 months is so critically important when you have hypermobile EDS, POTS, and mast cell issues. Most folks who come to me, say 20% of them officially have one of those diagnoses, and we're working to see which ones are officially official. And then also saying, is it hypermobile spectrum disorder, or is it hypermobile EDS, or a different kind? Because it's how it feels in your body that's important. It's not the name associated with it, because hypermobile EDS is a fancy name, and hypermobile spectrum disorder feels a little bit belittling. But what if you have none of the joints that get the points, but every single other joint? The lived experience of it could be a lot rougher than someone with hypermobile EDS. I also have a program called Hope for Hypermobility, where it's a group program, and we go through everything I find that works with people, but a way in which they can do it on their own, and they can bring ideas back to their team and start to grow a team. When I work with people, we always do a consultation ahead of time to see if it's a good fit. I affectionately call it, I can catch popcorn in the air out of one of those open top popcorn poppers, but I can't catch it in a tornado. And when I get the tornado folks, I say, these are the things you should do first, and then circle back to see if I'm a good fit. And I find like 25% of the people I talk to are a good fit right away. But if they're currently doing a sleep apnea investigation that I think might actually be a thing versus upper airway restriction syndrome, they should finish that first. Or if they're getting surgery in a month, they need to give themselves 2 or 3 months out from that. My approach to people is that they always know their body best, and that a lot of symptoms are caused, like I said, by not having been validated all along. Also, you could have grown up in a hypermobile family or a family with mast cell issues. And then you're like, oh no, we all react funny to foods. We all get rashes and hives all the time. We all roll our ankles, and that's why none of us ever play sports. And because it was normal in your circle, you just figured everybody gets their knee replaced at 45. That's not normal. I meet people at where they're ready to change, because some folks just aren't ready, but they want the validation. So I used to do something called diagnosed in a day, which really was diagnosed in about 2 months. And I found when people would get the diagnosis, then they were actually ready to do something with it. So I got rid of doing that because it wasn't a good fit for people, what they actually needed. It just felt good to get the initial diagnosis. I like to organize their thoughts and say, this is actually related to this issue and the way in which you talk about this. It's sounding like this thing that you've never thought of before. And that's when we get into more of the medical mystery solving. I absolutely love what I do. I have a good team and I'm looking forward to training other medical detectives so we can do it on a bigger level because it's intense work. And I know I can only take a limited amount of people. So I love bringing LDN into my clients' lives because if it's going to work, it's a really good jumpstart. But 90% of my folks have a lot of trauma, whether it's from childhood or medical. So we actually start really, really low, like 0.25, 0.5. And it's because they have so low confidence that they're not going to have side effects. And then if they get side effects, it's, oh, but I'm already nauseous. Oh, but I'm already dizzy. Like, but my sleep is already interrupted and I have really vivid dreams. So by rolling it back, I find that 60% of them successfully take it and enjoy it. But it makes it feel like less of a loaded topic to start it. So I do the olive oil titration or water, whatever works for them, with doing the crush tablets. So I'm excited to tell you about different success stories I've had with that because it's really fun to have people tell you about them.
Can we just go back? And you said that you also have these conditions. Could you explain what your life was like before you were diagnosed?
I would say I was the kid who was always rolling their ankles, having weird reactions to things. My main issue is hypermobile EDS, and I have the bonus crappy autoimmune disease, ankylosing spondylitis. So it's always teasing out what is related to what. My childhood seemed to me pretty idyllic. I don't have childhood trauma. But it wasn't a comfortable childhood. I was going to the chiropractor by the time I was 7 or 8. It was one of my dad's good friends, so I felt that we had a trust factor there. I went to naturopaths early on, took a lot of herbs, and things would get better and then things would get worse again. But I, like you, got mono, but I was 21. And so at 21, my health just took an abrupt nosedive. But before then, it wasn't comfortable. I say affectionately, I failed out of every sport I've ever played due to injury. So I have bone chips in both ankles from soccer. I had shoulder injuries from swimming, which felt like such an easy sport. You're in the water. This feels safe. And yet it wasn't. And I overreacted to the chemicals that they put in the pool and looked like a cherry tomato for a week, being a chemically sensitive person. So despite the fact that childhood felt fun and I was able to do fun things, it got progressively more uncomfortable the older I got. And in college, when I got mono was when everything took the nosedive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how easy was it for you to be diagnosed? How many doctors did you have to see?
It helps when you have friends. So I was already a nurse practitioner by the time I got clued in, because having been a nurse first and nurse practitioner, we're taught really early on physical therapy can fix most things. So I was in physical therapy for, I'd say, off and on for 6 years and more on than off before anyone said, and it was a PT, he said, we're always chasing something. This doesn't make sense. Like, you're in here for this problem, but then this one pops up and then this one. And it's like playing whack-a-mole, like go see spine, something else is going on. And I saw spine, they did the bite and you know, as you're proudly showing off how hypermobile you are. And they said, so you're really hypermobile. Take this handout, the one from Pysinky written in 2011. And as I sat there pouring over it, waiting to start up the car, I said, my whole life makes sense. Like, whether it's hypermobile spectrum, EDS, this makes all of my life make sense. Whether it was the migraines early on, the food intolerances, not being able to sleep well, being consistently dizzy, but always being told I was anemic because I didn't like eating meat. So my primary care was also someone who I was hired with when I was still working in primary care. I went in and I said, this is all the research. This is what I think I have. Will you do the workup so I can have an official diagnosis? And this was before they had the universal criteria. So honestly, my workup was even more intense than the mainstream one because we didn't know what we were doing. So we did every test. Interesting, we missed the ankylosing spondylitis one. It wasn't on our radar because it isn't part of the ANA panel. We didn't find that one until a few years later. So I was formally diagnosed around 2013 by the friend who was also my PCP. So in that way, it was easier. I don't know how it would have gone had I had someone who wasn't well known to me and knew I knew what I was talking about, because most people are seeing 6 to 20 providers before they get diagnosed, or they'll say, yes, we agree, but I don't have the skill set to make it official.
I mean, so many people tell me that they have been to multiple doctors. Some of them have been to as many as 20 different doctors. Mm-hmm. And because it's so complex that it could affect so many different parts of the body and organs, they haven't got the time to do all these investigations. Oh, they're overwhelmed. They don't know where to start. And if they have a very busy practice and you only have 10 minutes or so with a patient, as you know, 10 minutes is absolutely no time at all when you've got this complex patient that needs specialized care, shall we say.
When I was still diagnosing hypermobile EDS in a primary care setting, because I was on the lists of the people who were willing to diagnose it, when I'd meet someone, I'd say, this is more like a 3 to 6 month thing. So you could have it, but day one, we're talking, and then we'll do autoimmune labs. Then you come back in, we'll go over the labs, we'll do your scoring. Then we're getting into, if it's this, do we also need to think about POTS? We'll start things that will help you along the way, but ultimately this is not a one-day thing. This is not a one-month type of thing, especially given the limits of primary care. My practice was more flexible because as long as you were considered a productive provider, you could have longer appointments. So I had mine frozen at 30 minutes, which really meant I had between 25 and 45 based on how fast or slow the person before you was, which was very nice. The flow of primary care and then specialists, especially at your follow-up visit, because say you're in specialists, first time is 40 minutes, second one's only 20, and that includes their charting time. I feel like the official EDS diagnostic paperwork nowadays is really helpful, but it gives people false hope that providers can easily diagnose them because the first two sections are so clear. They're mostly done on tests. So the first one is all your bite and scoring. Those ones anybody can mostly look at, knees and elbows are a little bit harder to score. Second section, you can check the boxes. The bottom three you need an echo for. Go get yourself an echo. And as long as we say we're ruling out vascular EDS, like they pretty much have to approve it. But then the bottom one gets really gray. And it's, well, make certain you don't have all of these weird genetic problems. And if you also have an autoimmune disease, well, you might not be able to have this also, which I feel is fundamentally not true, because having an activated immune system for so incredibly long will set off a predisposition, particularly if you've had Epstein-Barr or mono. So it's the bottom part where other providers get stuck, because it's, well, I'm not going to order genetic testing on primary care, but genetics, especially University of Washington, they won't take anyone who's hypermobile. They're like, we'll take the vascular folks because there's a test for it. And because they draw off from all over the United States, they can't take the other ones. Like, they have a form letter. I think they've been using it for about 10 years, where it's, we realize you need this service, but our service can't actually help you because we are geneticists. And if it's truly hypermobile type, we don't have a test for you. But people get a lot of hope about going to places like that, but they can be diagnosed. And same with rheumatology. Rheumatologists, some of them are willing to diagnose, but other ones say, you know, is it fibro? Is it an autoimmune disease? I could agree, but if I haven't seen enough hypermobile EDS folks and I feel confident in this, they might not also be willing to make the diagnosis. It just, it takes so long to get in, Linda. So long.
So what would, obviously you are trying hard to get people on board. So what would you say if there are nurse practitioners, naturopaths, medical doctors who are interested in learning more from you and joining your network? How would that happen? How do you go about doing that?
The way I'm looking into doing it, because I've been talking about it for well over a year and I've had a decent amount of interest, is I want me to train them in the flow in which I do things, because I find the flow is pretty consistent. I want to go all the way back to when your mom was pregnant with you. What were the genetic insults you were born with? How hypermobile was your mom, your maternal grandmother, or perhaps it comes from a biological father's side? And then we're getting into autoimmune testing. So I've been trying to nail down the way in which I'm doing it with folks, so that then it can be replicated and then fine-tuned on the individual level. So in an ideal world, I would see these providers and put them through a training course of mine and see them every week or two for live case studies. And then they would bring me the hard folks that they have and the questions that they have. And then they would graduate from my program, have their own client panel, and then I would give them the continuing education, because there's so much out there, but it's also, what are we trusting and what are we not? How much of the qualitative versus the quantitative studies versus the nitty gritty on the ground talk? We're seeing this working, but we haven't done validated research on it yet. And then in that way, we would have more people in more states, let alone perhaps abroad, who can do these important things. Because hypermobile EDS is not one in 5,000. It's not one in 2,000. It's way, way, way more common than that. And we know people who are neurodivergent are also 50% more likely to be hypermobile than other people are. So, and they're not taken as seriously by mainstream medicine.
Do you do this virtually as well as in person?
I do it primarily virtually. I see people occasionally in person in Washington State. I've had people fly in to see me before when they have a particularly restricted state, so that then we can have a patient-provider relationship. But I find that although I love seeing humans in person, it is draining on my chronic body. So I'm able to see more people and take better care of myself when I'm not in person. But I do have a couple of extroverts, so whenever I'm in town, I see them.
I was actually referring to the medical professionals. Do you do that training?
Oh, no, that would be virtual, because I feel like getting all of us together is nearly impossible. So no, it would be done virtually. If ever we are large enough, we could have a conference on it, such as there's a mast cell conference in Oregon, in September 2024. And I think a lot of people who also work in the hypermobile world will be there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's their second or third year putting it on.
Okay. So could you give us a standout case study?
Yeah, I wrote down four, but they're all short and they all have common themes.
Okay.
So how about that?
That's good. Your picture keeps freezing. I'm going to turn my camera off and see if that makes it any better. Okay. Carry on.
Let me know if I should turn mine off. Okay, so the common thing amongst these folks is that three of my four officially have hypermobile EDS diagnosed by me. A couple have POTS. I'd say one of them is severe, two are mild. And yay or nay, some of them have autoimmune issues. So the first person that stood out to me, I'd been seeing her for about 3 months, and she had a low-grade positive ANA. She had inflammatory markers in the 30s to 50s. A couple blood cell sizes were off, and she had been diagnosed later in life with autism, but knew all along that she had anxiety and depression. She was coming in with this debilitating knee pain. And when I put her on an ultra low dose of LDN in 4 weeks, her knee pain was entirely gone. And then at the 8 week mark, her finger and hand pain, because she was an avid knitter, were gone, and her ANA normalized. Her inflammatory markers are still there, but I think it might have to do with being a much larger body size and potentially have untreated sleep apnea or an upper airway restriction syndrome type disorder. And she's noticed that with homeschooling her kid, she's much more patient also. I'm really interested in seeing if her labs continue to change the longer she's been on it, because her ANA normalized in 3 months. We're currently looking into mast cell issues as a potential cause of those labs also. Then the second person is extremely hypermobile, and to me that causes most of their issues, because there's a lot of joint dislocations. They had a normal ANA along with all of the really fancy autoimmune tests. Their ferritin was low, but they'd had like a 2 month menses. So I think that set it off. I don't think it was their baseline, but my goal when folks are anemic or have low ferritin is to get their ferritin to at least to the 50s, if not the hundreds, because it does contribute to chronic body pain and fatigue. So in 2 weeks on LDN, I believe she was at 1 milligram at the end of 2 weeks. She realized how profoundly her brain fog was reduced as someone who's in a really intellectual career. At 4 weeks, her entire body pain baseline was down at least 30%. This was to the point where they're sending me messages because they're so excited, because I'm seeing them every 4 weeks, and sometimes cool things happen before the 4 week mark. At the 12 week mark, all of her symptoms were 50% better. So brain fog was down 50%, energy was up 50%. Her joints were still moving, but the way in which she tolerated them was better. And she felt like she was able to be a fun and active parent to a little kid, when before it was how much was she going to suffer by being able to do something fun for a few hours. They got more into biking and walking the dog, which previously had been something that could set off a flare. This one's super interesting to me. This person has really substantial POTS, mast cell issues, and we were finding that none of their medications felt as effective as they should be. And to me, we still have to get into mold, but there's a financial barrier to ordering that test right now. They do not have hypermobile EDS, but we think that their sibling does. They also were diagnosed later in life with autism and ADHD, but we've known all along that they have chronic PTSD. At 2 weeks on an ultra micro dose, I believe we went from 0.1 to 0.2 to 0.4. We were talking about their sleep habits, and they said, I don't know what happened, but I'm staying up way too late, and like my sleep habits have just gone to crap. I don't know what's going on. And we rolled back date wise, and we realized that sleep habits became poor when they started LDN, because as they said, for the first time in forever, they felt peaceful. So LDN had turned on their parasympathetic nervous system, as someone who had been living in sympathetic for 20, 30 years. And so they enjoy being alone, feeling peaceful for so much in the evening that they lost their sleep habits because they were doing fun things at home, which mostly was like playing with the kittens, because kittens get the zoomies in the evening. So we ended up taking LDN even later so that the peace would set in and they could enjoy reading in bed, but that they wouldn't have their sleep habits be poor anymore. And at 8 weeks, it kept continuing. And around the 4 month mark, in combination with a different medication, they had the courage to have a hard conversation with their partner that enabled them to take a couple months off of work. And now they have completely rewritten their life path because they felt peaceful enough to make really hard decisions. In that person, it didn't help out their body pain. It just helped them out mental health wise. And then the other person who I just saw, the last one, the first day on LDN, they woke up the next morning and suspiciously they looked at their parent and they said, "I don't feel depressed." They said, "I've been depressed for 20 years. They're in their late 40s. They said, "I don't remember not feeling depressed, but I wouldn't say I feel really happy, but I don't feel sad." And it was such a profound change. They were afraid to even talk about it, as if they were going to jinx themselves and have it not work out. And they were feeling not depressed, despite the fact that, I don't know what it is. You probably do, Linda. LDN does not enable them to sleep. So we actually switched it to morning so they could continue to have it for their mood support. Because if they're not sleeping, it will set off their joint pains. So LDN has been really helpful, but I've noticed in some people with PTSD, when they have really vivid dreams, the vividity keeps them awake, or it keeps their brain awake. So this person said, "I'm not annoyed that I'm not sleeping because I feel so peaceful. I just really would like to sleep because then I have more energy the next day. But yet I'm not sad about not sleeping because I'm just at peace laying there." So it's all been really thrilling having these success cases with LDN. And then I get to share with other clients how it's helped people, because I do find it helps about 6, 7, 10 people. And those that it doesn't help, it's normally due to the vividity of the dreams versus just not doing anything. And so we try out different ways in which to down dose it or take it at a different time of day. But I'm really enjoying how it helps my clients out. And I started 8 years and years ago, but I consider myself a low responder because most of my pains are related to joints moving. So my LDN helps me out about 10%, which to me, anything 10% or above is worth continuing. And I don't want another bonus autoimmune disorder. And I know that LDN reduces my chances of getting another one. So, any thoughts on that?
That's amazing. Well, thank you very much. And would you like to give people your website so they can contact you directly?
Yeah, it's at the EDS, so EDS syndrome.com, the EDS clinic.com. And then anything you need to find out about consultations or the Hype for Hypermobility program are all on there.
Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, Linda, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.